Hare Krishna. So thank you everyone for coming this morning, praying for your blessings and permission. I'm trying to share something. So we're continuing to read from Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is the Madhyalila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chapter 8, entitled Talks Between Ramananda Rai and the Lord. Talks between the Lord and Ramananda, right? And we are today reading from, on the board is 43, but, excuse me, we'll begin with 40, 41, 42, and then we'll do 43 together. So just to put everything in context, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken sannyas and immediately he wanted to go to Vrindavan, but somehow or other, Nityananda Prabhu misdirected him. And now he's gone to Jagannath Puri and he's left Jagannath Puri to go to the south. In itself, that is a teaching. Vrindavan is in the north. To go to the heights of Vrindavan, first Mahaprabhu had to go to the depths of the south. He had to go down before he could go up. This is also a teaching in spiritual life. In the material world, they say what goes up must come down. But in the spiritual circles, we say what goes down definitely will go up. Because without dānya, without humility, without a complete feeling of insignificance, one cannot rise to actually have a relationship with Krishna. Burijan Prabhu, who lived in Vrindavan for many years, he composed a nice poem and he said, "May the hard crushing wheel of life extract some humility from my offense hardened heart, and may the nectar of that humility give rise to pure love for Krishna." So this is the teaching of the acharyas, that without dānya, there cannot be any prema. It was funny, actually. Yesterday, someone came to me. I hadn't seen him in a long time. I won't mention his name. He hadn't even spoken to me. He hadn't seen me. And he said to me, out of the blue, just in the corridor, he's walking past, and he said, "It seems you've developed more humility." I was like, I didn't see him for so long. I didn't speak to him. I hardly saw him. And then I realized, yes, actually he's telling me, develop humility. So yes, without humility, acharan dasavan nicho. One time a devotee quoted this verse and he said to Prabhupada, "Oh, dasavan nicho, it means you have to become a servant." Prabhupada looked at him and he said, "No, menial servant." Not just a servant, but one who serves feeling I'm unqualified, I am not who am I to do this? I don't have. So we must go down. We must bow down. I remember actually once, I will come to the verse. I remember when someone was here as a new person. And, you know, like everyone was bowing down in front of Prabhupada at Guru Puja time. So, you know, it's understandable. Someone may not feel comfortable, no, like bowing down. So he did like, a respectful. So he came in front of Prabhupada. He was very respectful, actually. And just went like, nice little bow there. And as he was walking back, one devotee was paying obeisances and he just tripped over him. And he just fell. And he did like the perfect dandavats in front of Prabhupada. So I was watching the whole thing. I mean, I couldn't stop myself from laughing. I shouldn't have been laughing. And then he walked back and I said, "You know what? You did the most genuine dandavats of everyone today." You know what dandavat means? It means to fall down like a stick. And then I remember actually what happened a few weeks later. What goes around comes around. I was there and the same thing happened to me. And when someone in a body whose height is like 6'5" falls on the ground, I mean, it makes a commotion in the temple room. You know? It's like, that was embarrassing, you know? And then I thought, actually, that was a real dandavats, because when you go down, you're actually supposed to feel so humble so insignificant. I thought that was probably the only genuine one I've done in my life. Janakinath Prabhu, he gave me one book. It was called, we used to read these books of Christian monks. So there was one Christian monk, he wrote a book, Falling Upwards. Very interesting book. I just saw it yesterday in my locker, that's why it came to my mind. And the whole book is about how life breaks you down and makes you humble, so you fall, and then by falling, you go upwards. So Mahaprabhu is coming, he is the Supreme Lord. Bhavishyani, Chabutani, Mamtu Vedana Kaschana, he knows everything. But he comes in front of Ramananda Rai, and he's going to begin inquiring about all kinds of spiritual subjects. So this is what we are talking about today. So let me just read the verses coming up to chapter number 43. verse number 43. So this is verse number 40. Translation. So this is Ramananda Rai speaking. My dear Lord, sometimes great saintly persons go to the homes of householders. Although these householders are generally low-minded, when a saintly person visits their homes, one can understand that it is for no other purpose than to benefit the householders. Purport, this is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:84. So this is a verse which is in the 8th chapter of the 10th canto. Krishna has just been born and he's in the home of Nanda Maharaj, and Garga Muni comes. And when Garga Muni comes, the Nanda Maharaj receives him with great respect, and he says this verse, that saintly people, you have no need to come to my house. You're self-satisfied, you have everything you need, but why do you come? You don't come for some money or for some food, or you come to deliver, to benefit, to give spiritual knowledge. That is the reason that the saintly people come. So Ramananda Rai is appreciating Mahaprabhu has come as a saint, and he's come to Godavari. Godavari means the confluence of many rivers. Another meaning of Godavari is the place where the ultimate meaning of Shruti Shastra is revealed. That's another meaning of Godavari. So here, this is definitely what's going to happen. Text 41. Along with me, Ramananda Rai is saying, there are about 1,000 men, including the brahmanas, and all of them appear to have had their hearts melted simply by seeing you. Translation. I hear everyone chanting the holy name of Krishna. Everyone's body is thrilled with ecstasy, and there are tears in everyone's eyes. So this is incredible. Mahaprabhu has come to Godavari, and everyone has just become completely captured, completely mesmerized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Is this golden avatar, molten gold, shining. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Godadaya Pushpavanto Chitro Shando Tamo Nudo. That Mahaprabhu is like the sun, and he's arisen on the horizon of Goda just to dissipate the darkness of Kali Yuga. So you can imagine, he's like glowing, and everyone is just thinking like, who is this person? It's amazing. You see this many times in Chaitanya Charitamrita actually. When Mahaprabhu enters the scene, people are just like, they just don't know how to react. Like for example, Mahaprabhu comes to Varanasi. You know, like Varanasi is a very holy place, but for bhaktas, it's like the driest place. Because Varanasi means the seat of Mayavad. Right? So it's a completely like, it's a, you know, when Mahaprabhu told Tapan Mishra to go Varanasi, he tells me, why are you going, sending me to that place? There's no Krishna Katha, there's no Amrit, there's no nectar. So Mahaprabhu comes there. And then he comes in the assembly of the Mayavadi sannyasis. And they are just like mesmerized. Like it's mentioned, Kaviraj Goswami says, Well, Prakashananda Saraswati says, Tomar prabhav sabar anindatya mane, kabu asangata nahe tomara vachane. He says, he sees Mahaprabhu and he says, Tomar prabhav. Prabhav means someone's influence, one's effulgence, what they're emanating from their entire being. He says, Tomar prabhav sabar anandita mane. It has brought so much joy to our hearts. We've become completely enchanted just by seeing your influence. And then in the very next line, you know what Prakashananda Saraswati says? Kabu asangata nahe tomara vachane. Now you please speak. And you know what? Whatever you say, we know it will not be unreasonable. Whatever you say, we know it will be truth. Whatever you say, we're ready to accept it. These are the most hardcore philosophers in the entirety of like India. They're totally against bhaktas. But just upon seeing Mahaprabhu, Prakashananda Saraswati looks at him and says, just speak. Whatever you say, I'm ready to accept it. I have no idea what you're going to say. I don't know what you're going to say, but I'm ready to accept it. It's amazing. Just by Mahaprabhu's being, just by his countenance, by his purity. Same thing. Mahaprabhu comes to Jagannath Puri. And what happens? He comes into Jagannath temple and he does something unspeakable. He just falls down in ecstasy. And Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, another hardcore Mayavadi, what does he say? Prabhura Sondarya aur Premara Vikar. Dekhi sarvabhoma hoilo vishmita apar. Sarvabhoma prabhura saundarya, looking at Mahaprabhu's beauty, or premira vikar, or the transformations of ecstasy in his character. Dekhi sarvabhoma, sarvabhoma was looking at it, hoilo, and when he looked at it, vishmita apar, he became completely astonished. Vishmita means astonished. He just didn't know what to think of it. He's like, I've never encountered anyone like this. They were trying to chuck him out, Mahaprabhu, from the Jagannath temple. Sarvabhauma got, I don't know who it is, I don't know what it is, but just don't leave him alone. Take him to, let's explore this a little further, just by seeing Mahaprabhu. So this is the greatness of Mahaprabhu, and it's not just Mahaprabhu, it's Mahaprabhu's devotees as well. They carry the same influence just by their presence. When the devotees from Bengal came to Jagannath Puri and Prachaparudra was on the terrace and he was looking at them, then he saw the devotees coming to see Mahaprabhu from Bengal. And you know, when devotees go from one place to the other, they don't just walk, they do like a Harinam on the way. Like I saw the devotees were going on Harinam the other day, so there was a Harinam on the train as well. So they just came into Jagannath Puri doing this Harinam. And Prachaparudra was like, who are these people? I mean, I've never seen anyone like this. And then it's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita very beautifully. Bhattacharya kohe e madhura vachan. Chaitanya Rishrishti e Prema Sankirtan. Bhattacharya looked at Prachaparudra and he said, "E Madhura Vachan, this is a very, very sweet sound. Chaitanya Rishrishti e, this is a special creation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu e Prema Sankirtan. These people have love. These people are pure. They are not just bhaktas, they are premi bhaktas. They are not just they are shuddha bhaktas. And therefore, naturally, whatever you hear from their mouth, whatever emanates from their character, immediately will have an impact on you." Prabhupada said very, very clearly, books are the basis, utility is the principle, preaching is the essence, and purity is the force. If you have purity in your character, If you walk the talk, if your actions are in line with your words, if you have actually deeply entrenched these principles within you, whoever you come in contact with cannot fail to be affected by that. In English, they have a saying, your character is speaking so loud, I can't hear what you're saying. Someone may say so much, good oratory skills, good knowledge, knows when to crack the right joke at the right time. But your character is speaking so loud, I can't hear your message. And you know what? It works the other way around as well. When someone's character is good, when they have purity, when they're actually living the Shastra, you know what? They don't have to say much at all. They don't have to. Just by seeing them, it's all over. Just by seeing them, you think, my God. I've been in classes like that where I've seen devotees, and it wasn't just inattentive hearing, but I was just with them. And after the class, it was like, I don't know, I could not necessarily recall so much of what they said, but you know what? I want to practice Krishna consciousness, you know? Just there was something about their being. Yeah, the great saints have this ability to... Srila Prabhupada was like that. He could... I remember Badri Narayan Maharaj tells this story of how the devotees had organized a program somewhere. It was kind of like a rough neighborhood. Anyway, they opened the door. He said they got a barbecue grill and they put in like frankincense in there, and then they just lit the whole thing up to like purify the atmosphere, because it was such a like a, it was like an urban ghetto, you know, it was like not a nice place. Anyway, when they opened the hall, they were ready to, you know, they were preparing everything, all the guests were coming in, and then all these Hell's Angels came into the hall. You know, like Hell's Angels, yeah, with the Harley Davidsons, like heavy, like, so they, oh my God, they're going to crash the whole program, you know. And anyway, the devotees carried on, the kirtan was building up, and then Prabhupada walked in. And as soon as Prabhupada walked into the hall, all the devotees paid dandavats. They just went down. And as they were paying dandavats, they just heard all these chains hit the ground. It's like, what was that? You know? And then like, you know, it's like all these, you see, and then they looked up and all these Hell's Angels are paying dandavats. Because like, I think there's some story like that, no? Prabhupada was coming out of a plane and everyone paid dandavats. And then one devotee kind of looked at Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada said, you know why they're bowing down to me? Because I've conquered sex desire. That's rare. I mean, that's... So that was like, wow, you know? So there's also... I mean, there's so much to say on this. There was also one Maharaj of Bardwan, and he went to see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So someone had told him, you know, like they told Prabhupada, Narendranath told him, go and see. So someone told him, go and see this Bhaktisiddhanta. So he said, okay, yeah, I'll go and see him. I don't mind seeing anyone. We'll have a conversation. So this, his friend was trying to tell him, no, this is like a sadhu, saintly person. When you go, like, have proper, you know, like, bow down, you know, like... He said, why I will bow down? I am an influential person. I have position. You know, I don't mind having a conversation with him. We'll have an educated conversation about philosophy. I will not bow down. I won't be disrespectful. I won't bow down. I won't. So, okay, fine. So he walked in, and in his mind he had it, I will not bow down. And he came in, and he came into the room, and he just abruptly said, I have some questions. And then he looked at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur could even answer, he was like... As he said, as I was going down, I was thinking, why am I going down? I said I would not bow down to anyone. He got up and he realized his purity made me bow. His purity made me bow. So this is the effect, you know, the word, just something, an indication. Yesterday, actually, I was also reading about Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. He was on a morning walk with Prabhupada. I don't know how many times Prabhupada spoke to him, maybe not so many. But on this morning walk, Prabhupada just looked at him. And you know what Prabhupada said? He didn't actually say anything. He just quoted a verse from the Gita. He just looked at Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and he quoted a verse from the Gita. Raga dvesha vamuktestu vishayan indriyescharan. Atma vasyer vidhei atma prashadam adhikacchati. Finished. He just looked at Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj and just quoted this verse. Raga dvesha vimuktestu. If you're able to go beyond all dualities, vishayan indriyescharan, and you're able to forego sense gratification, atma vasyer vidheyatma. In this life, you have to learn to control your senses, and if you do, prashadam adhigacchati, you will be fully able to receive the grace of the Lord. So this is what Prabhupada said to him. Control your senses and you will be able to fully receive the grace of the Lord. And he said practically the next day, he changed his whole routine. He started chanting 42 rounds every day. He was sleeping for 3 hours and he was eating once a day. And he maintained that for years. Just by a sadhu looking at you and just, that's all it takes. Because the power of the words is inconceivable. So this is Mahaprabhu's influence. And this is so important that we have such saintly people, because you may have noticed in this age it's very difficult to trust people. Have you noticed? Anyone here have problems trusting others? Maybe. Isn't it here in this verse 40, it's saying, when a saintly person comes to their house, they know this person has no agenda, and therefore they're able to put their faith. In this world, trust is so difficult. You know, someone may say, I trust Krishna, but I can't trust anyone else. Or someone may say, I trust Krishna and I trust Srila Prabhupada, but I don't trust anyone else. Or someone may say, I trust Krishna, I trust Prabhupada, I trust my guru, but all these others, let them become a bit more advanced. Or someone may say, I trust Krishna, guru, my mentor, but I don't trust the temple authority. Or someone may say, I trust all of these, but I don't trust the Vaishnavas. Trust is so difficult. Because Kali Yuga is a quarrel and hypocrisy. So trust in this age is very difficult. It's explained that because the ego and the pride is at an all-time high in Kali Yuga, ego and pride, when it manifests in the private arena, it manifests as hypocrisy. And pride and ego, when it manifests in the public arena, it manifests as quarrel, conflict, friction. Because ego and pride are so heavy in Kali Yuga, it manifests in quarrel and hypocrisy. And therefore, when we look around, so many people broke our trust. So many people we see, they say one thing and according to our perception, do another thing. So in this age, it's very difficult to trust. But without trust, without faith, you can't go to the spiritual world. Agyascha shradadhanascha shamshayatma vinashyati. Nayam lokosti na paro na sukham samsayatmana. If one is ignorant, doubting, one has no faith, one is constantly questioning, nayam lokosti na paro na sukham na param gatim.
श्री राधा गोकुल नंद की जय।
If you're constantly skeptical, it's like trying to drive a car with your foot on the brake. Like imagine you get in your driver's seat and you just keep your foot over the brake pedal. You say like, no, I've got to be careful. I'm driving, I've got to be careful. So you just keep your foot over the brake pedal. I mean, one thing's for sure, you're not going to crash into anything. That's for sure. Because you ain't going to be moving anywhere. If you're constantly skeptical, skepticism, which is the order of the day in Kali Yuga, skepticism blocks you. Skepticism can only reveal to you or save you from doing the wrong thing. But skepticism can never take you to doing the right thing. Skepticism can only save you from making a mistake, but skepticism can't take you to the truth. And therefore, saintly people are so powerful because they bridge the faith where we don't have faith. Why is it easy to put faith in a saintly person? Because you can put trust in a saintly person. Why? Because a saintly person speaks the truth. And in Sanskrit, you know the word for truth? Svata. Praman. Svata Praman means self-evident. So when someone comes in front of you and speaks the truth, there's a sense in which that emanation of that pure vibration doesn't need anything else to verify it. It just builds that confidence within you. When someone speaks the truth, you can put trust in them. And when that trust manifest, then one can have real exchange and make progress spiritually. So here Ramananda Rai is saying that you've arrived in Godavari. I'm here meeting you. It's the moment of my life. This is the moment when everything changes because I'm having your association. It's not a small thing. This is very, very big because the influence of a saintly person is very, very powerful. Let me just stop there. Does anyone have any questions on this? Trust, relationships, or anything I've said so far before I move on to another topic? Yes.
Hare Krishna, you mentioned that, we put our faith in or trust in saintly persons, but how does one recognize a saintly person? For example, you go to India, there's loads of sadhus and so on, and, you know, there are people who follow them religiously, but they may not be speaking the truth. So how do we know that they are speaking the truth?
Okay, so how do we recognize a saintly person? That's why so many times in the Gita, Krishna is giving the characteristics of a self-realized soul. So that one is able to ascertain who is actually on a level of advancement. In essence, in the Swarup Lakshan, how you know someone is saintly, Krishna says, Bhajate Maam Ananya Bhak Sadureva. If one is determinedly engaged in devotional service, that's the basic principle of who is considered saintly. It's nothing to do with dress, position, ashram. If they are determinedly engaged in devotional service, then you can understand them to be saintly. But then that surrender to Krishna will manifest in many, many other qualities. Abhayam sattvasam sudhir jnana yoga vyavastiti. Danam damascha yagyascha svadhyaya stapa arjavam ahimsa satyam akrodas dagya shantirapeshanam dayabhute shvalo luptvam mardavam rira chapalam. So many qualities are given: non-violence, cleanliness, control of the mind and senses, tolerance, kindness. You will be able to observe. So therefore, one must observe. And if one observes a devotee and feels, I cannot put my faith, we should own the problem. Sometimes you think like, who am I to test the guru? Maybe I will not be able to see who is guru, because I'm not at that level of advancement. So that's true. But what you are testing is your ability to put faith in that person. So if you turn around and say, no, that I cannot take guidance from that person, it's not their problem. It's our problem. I cannot put my faith there. And that's how you test without becoming offensive. So we must see, we must discriminate, and we must see, because what does Krishna say to Arjuna? Gatasun pragya vadamscha bhashashe gatasun agatasumscha nanu sochanti pandita. Pragya vadamscha bhashashe. Your words sound like they're very, very learned, but your character is something else. So that will not work. So it has to be both. A guru, a saintly person, is absorbed in the spirit, is able to speak that and communicate that. In essence, a saintly person is one who knows the way to Krishna, who goes the way to Krishna themselves, and who can show you the way to Krishna. That's like the contemporary sutra. Just translated from Shah. So, is that okay? Yeah. Anything? Okay. Lalita Mataji.
How to build trust when someone is like repeatedly shown mistrust. You know, when someone sees that it cannot be, someone else cannot be trusted, or anyone cannot be trusted. How does one build faith or trust in wherever?
So if someone is not showing the signs of someone who is trustworthy, I think the first thing we need to recognize is we may have a bias. We may like, maybe they are trustworthy, maybe we have a bias, maybe we have a kind of misjudgment of them, and then we're therefore constantly projecting that. So it's always good to maybe discuss that with someone or do a little bit of introspection and see, is it really them or is it just my issue? That's the first thing. The second thing is, if clearly someone you're not able to put trust in, that's fine. You can still respect them. You can respect from a distance, as they say. But the main thing is, when we encounter people who are not trustworthy, or we go through situations where our trust has been broken, we must not lose the principle of putting trust in someone. That's the problem. Okay, you may not be able to put trust in these people, but does that mean you're not on the lookout to put trust in someone else? Because if you have no trust, if you have no faith, therefore Krishna says, Shraddhaval labate jnanam tatpara shamyatendriya. You can't get this knowledge, you can't deeply ingrain it within your being unless you have faith. So we should not lose faith in the principle of faith. That doesn't mean we don't discriminate in who we put faith in, but I think you get the point. Okay. Yeah.
What if we have senior devotees that we have very strong faith in, but they're giving us advice that's differing?
Therefore, one has Diksha Guru, one has ultimate authority, and if one is not having contact with a Diksha Guru and ultimate authority in that way, then they should have a prominent Shiksha Guru that they can ultimately place their faith in. And that doesn't mean you can't take guidance from all of them. So often what happens in spiritual life, you'll have many devotees who you take guidance from, and then you take that guidance to maybe a Shiksha Guru who you kind of take as, you know, a more ultimate authority. And therefore then you process all of those opinions there. And then sometimes you may even process all of those opinions and the opinion of the Shiksha Guru and then take it to the Diksha Guru. So there are different ways. Everyone's life is different. Some people have that connection with their Diksha Guru. Some people don't. Maybe some people don't have a Diksha Guru. But then we must have someone. Because no one became a pure devotee. No one in the Vaishnav Parampara is self-made. There's not one person. Every great devotee, every great Vaishnav served another great Vaishnav. What to speak of every Vaishnav, even when the Lord comes in parampara, he serves a great devotee. Ishwarapuri looks at Mahaprabhu and says, Murkha tumi tomar nahik vedantadi kar, Krishna mantra japasada e mantra shar. You are a fool. You have no qualification to study Vedanta. Krishna mantra japasada e mantra sar. Just chant Hare Krishna. Anyway, so the point I'm making is that, yes, someone must have, because if you listen from everyone, you can end up listening to no one. And if you listen to everyone, it might equal to listening to your own mind, ultimately. So, is that okay?
Following on from what you just said, in terms of having an ultimate authority, so how to balance having an ultimate authority and using your own intelligence from the opinions of different Shiksha Gurus?
Sorry, can you just repeat that?
So if we have opinions from different Shiksha Gurus as to what to do, and then we have an ultimate authority, but how to balance taking what the ultimate authority says and also just using our own intelligence from what our Shiksha Gurus have said and trying to come to a decision for ourselves after having guidance?
Yeah, when we say ultimate authority, it doesn't mean that there's no thinking involved or it doesn't mean there's no personality involved. Even Krishna says to Arjuna at the end of the Gita, Iti te jnanam akhyatam guyat guyataram maya vimrashe tadashe shena yathechasi tathakuru. You have to use your own icha, you have to use your own volition at the end of the day. We're not imposing that you have an ultimate authority and now you have to listen to everything they say. That has to be very natural. You have to naturally feel like that. Otherwise it can lead you into more problems. If you don't feel like that, but you artificially say, okay, well, I've accepted it, now I have to do it. No, therefore even sometimes, you know, devotees maybe did not exactly follow what their spiritual master said because somehow or other they couldn't, for whatever reason. But so that faith must evolve, it must develop, it must come naturally. So we should not think that, oh, now I have an ultimate authority, there goes my throw it all out now. No, you use it. But gradually what will happen is your intelligence will become aligned. You will see how actually everything goes together. It's very beautiful in a relationship of faith when you have that with someone, then gradually you begin to see how every way in which you use your intelligence completely aligns with what that person is telling you. Everything comes together, but it must come naturally. It's not a forced thing. It cannot be artificial. And therefore Krishna doesn't make it artificial. He says to Arjuna, do what you want to do. Yes, bro.
I found out through Mother Kalangana, the person I trusted most was her at that time, because she always chastised me. Mm. And she was the person I trusted, because that helped me. I know she was trying to help me. She had no motive other than my improvement. And so in that way it was always good for me to really go back to that bottom line of the person's motive that somehow you've come to trust, because they're always correcting you. And and sometimes she would see some good, but generally it was with the correction I found her truth, because you know, I had so many problems, you know, and in that way. And the other time was when I was hearing about Krishna consciousness. I was hearing Prabhupada constantly, and then one day we were doing book table there on the Isle of Wight, and somebody approached me. He's a Christian, and he really had a go at me. And I thought, well, I love Jesus too, you know, because I was brought up in with this faith in Jesus as well. And I was so upset when I got home. I just sort of went in front of the altar to Prabhupada, actually. And I said, Prabhupada, please help me. I don't know if I'm doing right or wrong, but please help me. And it was within seconds a phone call happened. And then somebody on the other end, who I'd been getting take ministry from, said, how are you? I said, no, I just experienced something really, you know, sort of that's upset me deeply. And they said, yeah, I did too. And then they shared the same experience. And at an airport, when a Christian approached them, and he was trying to, she was trying to distribute books. And this Christian was so rude. And the person she was talking to, he said, after that person left, that Christian, he said, what a rude person. So really that alleviated my disparity, that I had an answer almost over the phone of somebody else who had a certain similar situation in an airport experience. And so somehow it was like an immediate answer to a prayer to Prabhupada. You know, he was the person, because I didn't know Krishna. I didn't pray to Krishna. I couldn't see Krishna. But it was Prabhupada I went to in that way. It was a interesting experience, but somehow an answer will come eventually, but usually for somebody who sort of, you may not think they're your friend, but they are at the end of the day, because it causes you to go deeply within yourself. And
So, thank you. Yeah, I mean, these are the two gifts of a spiritual teacher: humility and confidence. Both things are there, actually. The first thing is they will engender a mood of humility within you. They will expose. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I'm not just a proofreader of the press. I am a proofreader of my disciples. And I look at their life and I can find out what's amiss. Right? So the saintly souls are like proofreaders of our life. So they engender a sense of humility, because they reveal what we don't want to see in ourselves. You know, the scariest person to meet in the world? Yourself. Sorry, I'm not, nothing personal. The scariest person to meet in this world is our own self. And when a sadhu comes in front of you and reveals, because they are a proofreader and they reveal, is humbling. But the sadhu also gives so much confidence. Why can a sadhu give confidence? Because a sadhu you have trust in. And why do you have trust in a sadhu? Because they speak the truth. And why is the truth powerful? Because it's svata praman, it's self-evident. It doesn't require anything else to support it. And therefore, this is very... So, I think Prabhupada gave that analogy of a potter, isn't it? A clay, like they hold the pot inside. So inside the pot, they put the fist, and on the outside, they tap. They hit it to mold it into shape. So that's guru. You know, they're hitting. I mean, they're hitting, really hitting sometime. But they're not just hitting, the hand is inside to support, because if the hand is not there, then the pot will break. And if just the hand inside and no hitting, oh, you're amazing, you're great, don't worry, you are. No, then there's no transformation. So it's such an opportunity. Prabhupada gave us this movement so that we can have these relationships, which are relationships of trust, which help us to evolve towards Krishna. And time is going. I think, what time do we need to finish? Jagat Priya was saying, is it 8:45? It says sun 9, but I think she was saying it's 8:45 today. Is that true? Yes, 8:45, right? Okay. We must read Prabhupada's verse. Somehow or other, Hare Krishna. Okay, so we are reading from text number 43, if you can. Okay, so if you can repeat after me. Akritya prakritya tomar ishvara lakshan. Jivana sambhave e aprakrata gun. Akritya prakritya tomar ishvara lakshan. Jivana sambhave e aprakrita gun. In the interest of time, I'll just read and then discuss. I'll just do the translation in purport. So translation. My dear sir, according to your behavior and your bodily features, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is impossible for ordinary living beings to possess such transcendental qualities. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's bodily features were uncommon. Indeed, his body was extraordinary in its measurements. The measurement of his chest and the measurement of his forearms were the same. This is called Nyagroda Parimandala. As far as his nature is concerned, he was kind to everyone. No one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be kind to everyone. Therefore, the Lord's name is Krishna, the all-attractive. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 14:4, Krishna is the kind father of everyone. In every species of life, sarva yonishu, he is the original father, the seed giver, bija, prada, pita. How then can he be unkind to any living entity? One may be a man, an animal, or even a tree, but the Lord is kind to everyone. That is God's qualification. He also says in the Bhagavad Gita, samoham sarva bhuteshu, I am equally kind to everyone. And he advises, sarva dharman parityajya mamekam saranam braja. Give up all other engagements and simply surrender unto me. This instruction is meant not only for Arjuna, but for all living entities. Whoever takes advantage of this offer is immediately immune to all sinful activity and returns home back to Godhead. While present on this planet, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made the same offer. Okay, this would be a 5-minute class. I mean, so much what to say. When Mahaprabhu was on this planet, he made the same offer. I think 4 times in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna is very kind, he's so kind. Who can be kind but Krishna? So Mahaprabhu, he is so kind. He's come to Godavari and he's embraced Ramananda Rai. That embrace of Ramananda Rai in itself is so symbolic. There is a distance by convention between Ramananda Rai and Mahaprabhu. They're different varnas. They're different ashrams. They're in different social positions. They're even different tattvas. One is God and the other one is a living entity. Shakti. But in Mahaprabhu's embrace, what he does is he says, all of those differences don't matter. Devotion trumps convention. Because you have devotion, because you have love, therefore all of those differences don't matter, and Mahaprabhu just hugs Ramananda Rai. An embrace is very, very symbolic. An embrace, when you embrace someone, it means you're trying to take them within your heart. Sambhoga, when you meet someone, Mahaprabhu meets Ramananda Rai and he embraces him. Because in Sambhoga, what you want to do is meet the person, and then by hugging them, by embracing them, you're trying to imprison them within your heart. And Vipralamba means that someone is in your heart, and you're praying, okay, come out, come out. I want to see you. I want to interact with you. I want to serve you. I want to have a relationship with you. So Sambhoga, meeting, means to embrace and bring someone within to your heart. And Vipralamba means they are in your heart and you want them to manifest outside of you. So this embrace is amazing. There's so much that can be said about this embrace. But Mahaprabhu is very kind. He's trying to embrace everyone. If you think about Mahaprabhu, it's like you can think about it like circles. Imagine Mahaprabhu is in the center of the circle. Then there's one circle around Mahaprabhu, which are his 3.5 intimate associates. Ramananda Rai, Sikhi Mahiti, Sarvabhaum, Saurabh Damodar, and Madhavi Devi. Okay, so you have Mahaprabhu. Then you have his intimate associates. Then you have the Bengali, Orissan, Vrindavan, associates of Mahaprabhu. And then outside of that circle, you have members of the Vaishnav Sampradayas. Outside of that circle, you have members of the Vedic tradition, like the Mayavadi, Sarvabhauma, Prakashananda. Outside of that, you have members of different religions. Outside of that, you have the general populace. And then outside of that, you have animals. And you know what? Mahaprabhu embraces all of them. You will be very, very hard pushed to find any personality in the history of theology who reaches out to so many circles in such a profound way, so intimately. Mahaprabhu engages all of those years with his intimate disciples in Jagannath Puri. Outside of that, he spends time, you know, with all his devotees in Rath Yatras, in Vrindavan. Outside of that, he speaks to all the 4 Vaishnav Sampradayas, isn't it? Nimbarkacharya, he spoke to Keshav Kashmiri. Sri Sampradaya, he spoke to Vyankatabhatta. Madhva Sampradaya, he spoke to the Tattvavadis in Udupi. Rudra Sampradaya, he spoke to Vallabhacharya. So he spoke to all the Vaishnav Sampradayas. Not just that, he went further. He converted the Vedic traditions. He spoke to Sarvabhauma, to Prakashananda Saraswati. Not just that, he went to other religions. He spoke with Muslims, to the Pathans, to Chandakazi. He spoke to the Buddhists, isn't it? In one Orissan manuscript by Ishvara Das, it's even said that Mahaprabhu met Guru Nanak. There's an account that Mahaprabhu and Guru Nanak were in front of the Rath Yatra car doing Nam Sankirtan. This is also in an Orissan manuscript. So he spoke to different religions. Not just that, he spoke to the people in general. And not just that, he spoke to the animals. Jarikanda, you know. Shivananda Sena had a dog, isn't it? And then they were coming to Jagannath Puri. Somehow the dog got lost on the way. And then they arrived in Puri and they saw the dog next to Mahaprabhu. So Mahaprabhu was sitting on the seat and he had coconut pulp and he was throwing it. Like, and the dog was like eating it. And then he was telling the dog, Chan Hare Krishna, Chan Hari Hari. And then the dog went back to Godhead. So Mahaprabhu, yes, in the verse here is interesting. It says, or in Prabhupada's purport, the first line, Mahaprabhu's bodily features were uncommon. You know, one of Mahaprabhu's bodily features is that his arms, you know how long they were? If you stand up straight and you put your arms down, his arms would reach the knees. Vrindavan Das Thakur says, Ajanulambitupujo kanakavadato samkirtane kapitaro kamalayataksho Vishvambaro dvijavaro yugadharmapalo vande jagat priyakaro karunavataro. Mahaprabhu Ajanulambitupujo kanakavadato. Lamba. I also get that sometimes. Very long. His arms were very, very long. Kanakavadato, his complexion was like gold. Samkirtane kapitaro, he was the inaugurator of Sankirtan. Kamalaya taksho, his eyes were like lotus, flowers. Vishvambaro, he was maintaining the whole universe. Yuga Dharma Palo, and he was protecting the religion in the age. Vande, I offer my obeisances. Jagat Priya Karo, to that person whom is so dear to everyone in the world. Karuna Avataro, because he's the most merciful. But the point here is that Mahaprabhu's hands, arms were very, very big. Can you imagine what it must have been like when Mahaprabhu was raising his hands in the kirtan? So because his arms are so big, his embrace is so wide. And therefore Prabhupada is saying here, yes, Mahaprabhu had uncommon symptoms. Not just physically. Not just physically were his arms so big that he could embrace everyone. But his heart was the heart of Srimati Radharani. And that heart was so kind, was so compassionate, was so merciful, that that heart embraced everyone. All of these circles which are around Mahaprabhu were ultimately drowning in Gaura Prem. And so, as we remember these verses from the 8th chapter of the Madhya Lila, we can remember that anyone who is Mahaprabhu is having this incredible influence. His very being is just capturing the mind. And anyone who lives with that purity, they will also have a similar effect. And those saints who live that purity, they are the hope for the world, because it allows all of us to then place our faith in them, like Srila Prabhupada. And those saints who we follow then take us to Krishna. And so Ramananda Rai is just feeling so much gratitude that this is the turning point in my life, because now I am in the presence of a saint, a saintly person, the Supreme Lord who's come as the best saint. And so we can pray that may we always walk with the sadhus, with the saintly people, following in the footsteps of the acharyas and keeping Krishna as the goal. And as we walk in that way, with faith and trust, then we achieve the goal of life. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So I went over time already. So unfortunately we don't have time for questions another day. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.